Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah.
Chris Elogi, he'll be with us momentarily. He said he was probably going to be a little late, but he told us to go ahead and start without him, so that's exactly what we're doing. So, hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Last week.
Mine was great last month.
Yeah. Hope you managed to overcome the food coma and or hangover.
More both.
Well, I overcame the hangover by not having one.
Yeah.
I actually ate with my alcohol.
That's,
I'm pretty much invincible when I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is now December 6th, 2019. First show of the last month of the year.
Yep. Some people say last month of the decade. Technically it is, because the decade would have started in 2010.
Yeah.
Not 2009, like some people seem to think.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's December now, and you know what that means.
Christmas.
Santa's poking his
frozen
ass
white
and everything.
Blanket of suck outside.
The temperature plummets. All the birds are flying south. Which means everything's covered in bird shit. Everybody's got their Christmas decorations up. The Amazon people that are sending out the packages are mixing them up.
Yeah.
Because they're overloaded with shit.
Yeah.
And it's fucking cold.
Yeah. 17
so
right now, so that's great.
Yeah. But So what do we got to talk about? Well, the impeachment hearings have more or less ended. It's now going to go to the House, and they're going to be voting on whether or not to officiate those articles of impeachment. After that happens, it then goes to the Senate, who then have to convict him. Whether that or not that's going to happen is anybody's game.
Yeah.
Because the Senate is firmly in the hands of the GOP, and I have no faith in anyone in the GOP in the Senate to have any semblance of a moral backbone. So it's a coin flip, basically.
Yeah.
Chris is with us now.
Yeah, he just, hey. Just joined us.
Hey. Yeah. All right. So the whole gang's here now. Good. Okay. So what are we going to be talking about this week? Well, obviously, since we didn't have a show last week, we kind of have bits and pieces from what would have been last week's show. But mostly, of course, we're going to be talking about some of the stuff that happened during the impeachment watch. We're also going to be – we got some news about somebody who dropped out of the Democratic presidential race. And let's be honest, this was something that I guess the mainstream kind of anointed as the chosen one, that didn't turn out that way. Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro is fucking insane. I know that's not news, but yeah. The UN put out a report on climate change, and it's about as dystopian as you can expect it to be. And we got a whole bunch of Netflix stuff to talk about, and of course a bunch of trailers. Including the next Bond movie, which, if you haven't heard, there's been a small bit of controversy about that one because people got a tiny bit of detail wrong about what it's supposed to be. Just newsflash, no, a black woman is not the new James Bond. That's not how the story works. We'll explain it.
Yeah.
But again, it's fucking idiots everywhere, I swear. And Disney has the second trailer for the live-action version of Mulan, which isn't really so much a live-action version of the Mulan Disney movie so much as like a Wuxia version of the original Mulan story. So, and of course, that story goes back several centuries.
Yeah.
But anyway, so without further ado, let's get things started the way we always do. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of the same stuff that I've been doing the past few weeks. A lot of PC building simulator. I actually started playing some other games, which I know is a shock to everybody. But yeah, I've got back into Diablo 3, and you know, the season 19 just started, so it's like, well, I'll give that a shot, and it's fun. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in there. Still a good game, despite, you know, Blizzard kind of being in the shitter right now. I can't really, you know, fault them for that. And I've got Diablo 3 I bought years ago, so might as well get my enjoyment out of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. I listened to the entirety of Slayer's Reign in Blood, which doesn't take very long, because it's like a half an hour album.
Yeah,
but it's like half an hour of being punched in the face.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah. So, that was pretty good. What else have I been doing? Yeah. Mandalorian is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have, watched it. I think Chris did. But, yeah, damn good show. I'm kind of surprised at how well a Star Wars spinoff has actually turned out, because usually those tend to be pretty terrible. I don't know. I was one of the people who just couldn't get into the Clone Wars, so, you know, this has actually grabbed me, so that's pretty cool. And apart from that, not a whole heck of a lot. Just trying not to freeze, because it's Canada and it's winter. And thankfully, I now live in an apartment that's actually properly insulated, so the heat that is generated stays in the apartment. So that's a new concept for me, given what I put up with the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember how bad that got.
Yeah. Got a nasty surprise from my hydro at the end of that winter. Yeah. So that was great. But, yeah, that's kind of it. Just kind of winding down the year and getting ready for the holidays. How about you, Pat?
Just reading more X-Men books. I'm still thoroughly enjoying the reboot. I really am not going to have much to add to that until more people are ready to talk about it. But that is definitely a discussion that's going to be brewing up here. As that plays out. So I'm looking forward to whatever week we do that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I've just been doing some more kind of soul searching in the fighting genre, looking for more games to latch onto, and nothing's really come up yet, but I haven't had much time for it either. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I have no idea, what I'm going to end up playing long term, so we'll see.
All right. So how about Chris?
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I went and I saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood in the theater on Monday. That was really quite good. It's an interesting story because it's based on like a real thing. I don't know if it was Esquire or a different magazine, but they have it as Esquire in this movie. A writer that generally did like investigative work is sort of given the task of doing a quick like 400 word profile on Fred Rogers, also known as Mr. Rogers. And he's not exactly happy about it because it's not the sort of work he usually does. But he ends up going kind of with the attitude of like, well, he can't really be like he is on the show, that sort of thing. And also kind of coming off of his wife just giving birth to their first kid and sort of a not so great time at his sister's wedding, where kind of is surprised that their dad, who he doesn't have a great relationship, just because of the way that his relationship with their mom kind of went. They get into it more in the movie, but like ends up getting a fight with him, and sort of this all builds up of him going to Mr. Rogers and finding out that he kind of is the Mr. Rogers that people know about, and like his wife is especially like a childhood fan of Mr. Rogers, so she very much just like tells him before he leaves, like, don't ruin my childhood for me. Finding out like any nasty stuff, but kind of comes to understanding that kind of he is what he portrays himself as on the show.
Yeah. Because the real Fred Rogers was exactly the same person you saw in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. They were no different in private than they were on camera.
Yeah, and kind of comes to realization like that's that kind of person is somebody that he kind of needed at that point to help him kind of come to terms with his feelings about his father and his life at that point and all that kind of stuff, and kind of grows to become like family friends as he deals with a lot of like tragedy that's happening around him and all that. And it's kind of a really nice movie, for as much as there's kind of this whole story that it's kind of focusing on more than the Fred Rogers part.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Hanks does a really good job as Mr. Rogers. Obviously still looks like Tom Hanks, for as much work as they can do with, you know, the hair and all that and the makeup and all that. But yeah, it's a really well done movie. Mm-hmm. I think I'm probably going to go see Knives Out tomorrow. Since I got the day off, go see that. Looking forward to that. And yeah, I've been doing a lot of doing some streaming this week. Last Sunday, I did a Sega Ages stream. Kind of played a few of the games that were on sale. Virtual Racing, Outrun.
That is a good port of Virtual Racing.
Yeah, Monster Boy, or whatever it's called. Wonder Boy, Monster World, I think, something like that. And what was the other one? It was a fighter called Lightning, or a shmup called Lightning Force. Mm-hmm. Like lightning, like, you know, from the sky, lightning.
Right. So yeah, that's Thunder Force 4, just spelled incorrectly.
Yeah, you can change it to the Japanese version, so it shows the title screen as Thunder Force 4. yeah, Virtual Racing is a really cool game that controls pretty well. And they have just three tracks in there as far as what I've seen so far. It's like a beginner, medium, and hard track. And the hard track is no joke. Because it's a lot of like tight turns that you have to be very much on yourself for that to get any sort of good time. So mostly the best stuff I did was on the beginner track. Which when you manage to actually finish the race in first place, you get this treat of seeing like what early 90s polygonal games looked like, which is like this mess of polygons that just constantly clashes with itself. It's like you see characters like walking in their like clothes and skin polygons are like you know, breaking all the time, that kind of thing. In a way that just looks really funny. But yeah, they have some cool like camera options. So there's like a what they call a VR mode, which is just the cockpit mode. But you can zoom out pretty far as well. There's like four different camera options. Like the zoom out kind of shows you that you're kind of probably the way it's actually controlling is that it's moving the track more so than you're controlling your car on it. Because you can see, like, as when you zoom out all the way, that the track tilts as you're moving around it in a really interesting way. And it just has a really nice style to it, and that kind of, like, early, simplistic kind of 3D polygonal look that definitely influences stuff like Horizon Chase Turbo and all that. Outrun was pretty neat because it has a lot of difficulty options in it. So you can extend the timer to either be really short or really long, to give yourself a chance of actually finishing, as well as, I think, turn up the difficulty and all that, and make it easier, whatever you want to do, as well as, I think, the different paths you go make it harder or easier. And, yeah, there's also motion controls on that, so you can use the Switch itself or the Joy-Cons or the Pro Controller, whatever has whatever you're using to do motion controls, which works about as well as you expect. But the game itself is still a lot of fun. And the thing that I never really realized back in the day when I was playing this is that when you crash, like, the people are getting thrown out, like, they should be dead every single time.
Yeah.
Because they're not using seatbelts for some reason. So every time I crash
in just getting ejected
way,
from
I was like,
the vehicle and
yeah,
the car rolls over on them.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, these people are dead. We need new people in. Take over in this race. That sort of thing. So that's pretty neat. We try to get online, try to get an online match going with the virtual racing, but I never seem to find anybody in a reasonable amount of time, I guess. Yeah, Lightning Force is pretty cool, though. It has a lot of real estate you can move between, because you kind of scroll up and down good ways just to cover, like, all the potential enemies that could be on the screen. It's not just limited to just what you see on the screen. So there's a lot of, like, potential, like, movements up and down that game is just hard enough as it is. And Wonder Boy Monster World is pretty fun game. I've played it before on the last gen versions they put out. Yeah. And surprisingly reasonable on the continues. You just, like, restart on the screen you're on. Rather than be like, hey, fuck you, you gotta start all over again. It does not do that, which is pretty nice. But yeah, those games are all pretty good. And nice thing is we had a raid happen when I was on the hard track on virtual racing. So I was, like, playing that, and I noticed, like, a bunch of people chatting in the chat, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And I just crashed. Everybody's like, ah, we got him. Everybody there was pretty nice, so I got a few more follows out of that, and had a way of showing a lot of people that, yeah, there's a bunch of these, like, classic Sega arcade games that are on the Switch eShop for people that didn't notice that. Especially that they were online, so yeah, that was pretty nice. And ended up skipping Tuesday. I was just tired for streaming, but came back on Thursday to play Super Mario Maker 2, which just got the big update that added some new stuff in it. And particularly the big thing that is kind of the game changer is the Master Sword is in the game now, which transforms Mario into Link. And you get a bunch of new moves as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good tutorial stages that kind of show off all of these. Because otherwise, if you just, like I did, I just jumped into a new random stage that was like, oh, here's like a quick Link thing. And I was like, got into it. I was like, I have no idea what Link can do. So he has a bow. If you hold any of the shoulder buttons, you can do like a straight shot. Or you can do a diagonal shots up and down, as well as if you're aiming it and then jump, you can sort of get some air shots. There's some pretty neat, like, physics for that, so that there are puzzles that some of these stages show off that you have to do, like, a diagonal shot and sort of kind of get the arrow to kind of go almost down like a little chute to hit, like, a P-block. To open up like a next area kind of thing is the way people are using it right now. You also have the bomb, which I think is up and Y. And that controls a bit weirdly because you cannot do that while you're in the air. Like, none of these moves I think you can do in the air for the most part outside of the one that's kind of Link's equivalent of the butt stomp, which he does like a downward stab. So people set up like stacks of enemies, you just do that through them, all that sort of stuff. There's also, you got their shield, so there are elements of I forget what the enemy is called. But it's one that shoots out like these spiky balls. You can use the shield to block that, and usually the way it's been set up is like that'll just break through blocks to open up a different path. So people use it in some interesting ways for that stuff. And along with that shield, if you hold, I think it's down to hold the shield. If you hold B while you're doing that, B or A, you'll start to do like a sprint with the sword out. So you can take out a bunch of enemies that way as well. So there's like a lot of cool like moves and mechanics that form brings that opens up the game completely as people are trying to create like essentially like dungeon stages with a bunch of puzzles and such for Link to do. I was going through one that I could not get through, at least on stream, because I kept running out of time before I could get to the next checkpoint. There's a point where I need to get like these six key coins to get a key and get to the next area. And it was really tough. Just, you have to have like a certain mastery of the controls, of the mechanics and all that, to get through it. And I think I saw like the world record is some like, 16 minutes, something like that. It was pretty lengthy. Even though the timer is set at like 500 seconds, because when you die, it'll just give you a new 500 seconds. So you can kind of keep playing a bit if you're able to kind of figure out how to best get through some of those areas. But that is a big update for that game. As people are kind of getting a little bit antsy of like, there hasn't been any new things added in a few months at least. But yeah, that was a lot of fun to kind of go through some of that stuff and see some of the cool stuff people are making already. And yeah, the main game I've been playing in my free time has been Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. That's just been getting better and better, especially as I got the ability to force pull, which lets you kind of pull some stuff to you, especially things like ropes that they have set up in the area where you learn the force pull maneuver. So you have a way to get across some bigger gaps that you don't necessarily have normally. And a lot of other ways that you can use it, especially like pulling enemies towards you. So there's some where like an enemy's across the gap, so I just pull him towards me and then let go and he just falls to his death kind of thing in these gaps. And that game just continues to get really fun. And that's been largely it. It's starting to get cold as shit out here. It's wind chills in the 20s every day, pretty much at this point. How about you, Brandon?
All right. First and foremost, Titanfall 2. Been playing the campaign. Absolutely one of the best campaigns you will ever encounter in a first-person shooter, bar none. And for those of you who don't know, it's if you are on PSN, it's one of the free games you get this month. So go get it while you can.
Yeah.
It is absolutely worth your time.
This isn't new for you, though. You've already played it before.
Yeah, but I wanted to go through it a second time. Yeah. And it had been a while, too. Yeah. So, but yeah, God, that game is fun. So much fun, though. That whole aspect of where you're, like, zipping back and forth between time periods is, like, probably one of the best moments in gaming, period. Because of just how solid it is. Mm. Literally everything you do in one timeline affects the other. So, like, you go back and, you know, the soldiers are everywhere, and you end up shooting them. You go back into the present. Their corpses are still there. Like, it really does. It's that deep. But yeah, the only problem is that campaign just is so short. Like, it's over and done with far too quickly.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because it's so damn good. But yeah, so I've been playing that. Also been playing Destiny 2. Because again, free to play right now. So Yeah, that's good. I'm wanting to go and get a copy of The Outer Worlds when I can get the money, but that's going to have to wait. And, you know, I still want to end up playing Jedi Fallen Order, which, by the way, they did not bring down the price for Black Friday this year.
Yeah, I noticed that, too.
Oh, yeah, go fuck yourself, EA. Yeah, that's probably true. Also found out, so you know when you start the game and there's like where Cal is like listening to some song on his, I guess is the Star Wars equivalent of an iPod.
Yeah.
And it's like that really like heavy guttural sounding song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys remember when I was talking about The Who the other day? Yeah, it's them. It's those guys.
Hmm.
So apparently The Who is now Star Wars canon.
That is an anachronism.
Yeah. Although I think the version you hear in Jedi Fallen Order is actually, it's not the original, because I've seen footage of them playing that song live, and the lyrics are definitely different. I think the one they're singing in the Jedi Fallen Order, they actually took the lyrics and translated it into Huttese.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Let's see, what else? You know, Phil mentioned Slayer, and I got into the extreme metal side, too. So I have this thing for bands that have singing drummers. I don't know why. It's just something I find neat.
Mm-hmm.
And probably one of the best American black metal bands you will ever encounter is a band from Texas called Absu.
Mm-hmm.
Who, the guy who's primarily like the big idea guy behind the band is a guy named Prescriptor McGovern, who's both the drummer and the lead singer. And let me just put it this way. If you go on YouTube and you look up for a song they did, the live version of a song they did from an album from 1997 called Highland Tyrants Attack, again, he's both the drummer and the lead singer. So he's got, instead of like, you know, having like the mic on like a stand over the, you know, that stick that's, you know, curved and sticking over the kit, he's got a headset on.
Yeah.
And he fucking milks it for all it's fucking worth. Because keep in mind, this is black metal. And if you know anything about how drums work in black metal, yeah, take that and multiply it by three. Because he fucking fills that shit. He is the fills master. And somehow is able to do all of this and yet still manage to get that shriek out through the whole song. Like, it's fucking amazing. Let's see, what else? Christmas shit. It is Christmas is here now, of course. Getting the tree up. You know, putting up the decorations. And then there's stuff that's not Christmas related that happened, like having a squirrel get stuck in your chimney. Yeah, we had to deal with that today. Now, it's not as bad as it used to be. We've had squirrels get stuck before, but up until a few years ago, we didn't have like a grating or whatever between then and there, between the chimney and the fireplace. So they ended up just falling straight into the fireplace. Well, this time we had the grating up, but that meant he couldn't get back up the chimney, so we had the exterminator guy come in, and basically we had to sort of jerry-rig it so that the grating would go up and try and convince the squirrel to come down into this little trap that the dude had made so that he could release it outside. But it was kind of a pain in the ass. But we managed to get him out. What else? Oh, yeah. So one of the things I had to help we were doing this week is trying to clean some stuff out to get it into other areas of the house. So for one thing, I was helping my dad get his toolbox, which when I'm saying toolbox, I don't mean like a little thing that you can carry. I mean like a big giant fucking thing with shelves and shit on wheels. And he had this bright idea. Is like, hey, we're gonna take my tractor and we're gonna take like some of this rope here, and we're gonna tie it around the toolbox, and we're just gonna sort of slowly roll it over into his workshop that he has in the backyard.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh, every fucking thing went wrong. See, here's the thing. He actually thought that, yeah, it was possible that this thing could fall over and there are things in here I would prefer not to get banged up. So he said, okay, I want you to walk alongside it, sort of like have your hand on it, so make sure it doesn't like fall over. And so he went, you know, really slow and everything was fine. For some reason though, he decided to drag it across our gravel section of the driveway. Oh. So it didn't fall to the right, it didn't fall to the left, it fell forward. And as it fell, it tore off two big chunks of flesh off of my middle and ring fingers.
Ow.
Yeah. Oh, and that shit bled like crazy.
As they are wont to do.
Yeah. I was thinking, fuck, did I nick an artery or something? I was like, no, it's just... That part of the anatomy, it just bleeds like crazy when it's cut like that. So, yeah, that was fun. But now he's got little blood spots all over his workshop because, yeah. But anyway, it's fine now. It's fine. I got Band-Aids on it. It's cool. But yeah. So, that's about it. Anything we want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
No? All right. So, with that being said, I do believe it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, quick question. Who here grew up Roman Catholic?
I did.
You did? Chris, what about you?
What was that?
Did you grow up Catholic?
No.
Okay. And I know Pat didn't. He was Mormon. But yeah, so in Roman, everybody knows in Roman Catholicism, obviously with Roman Catholicism, there's the church. And in the church, you've got, you know, the bishops and you got the Pope. And the idea about the Pope and the bishops is that the Pope is supposed to be God's representative on earth, right? That's at least the idea.
In theory, yes.
And then... Yeah, and then the bishops are supposed to be the ones who sort of go out and do his will. That's the idea, again. So it probably wouldn't surprise you that for the longest time, you know, although, you know, we give – there's a certain kind of reverence that we give to the popes in the modern era that not quite how it used to be. So like, for example, the concept of papal infallibility, that's actually a fairly recent idea that didn't become like church doctrine until like the 1800s.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at some of the popes back in the day and
yeah, we're fixing to talk about one of them. So there's been some fairly infamous popes throughout history. Probably one of the most infamous, not the one we're going to be talking about today, but probably one of the most infamous is, what's his name? The guy who was, he was like the patriarch of the Borgia family.
Oh, I know where this is going.
I think it's not Pope Innocent. And again, we're not actually talking about him today, but this is just an example of, who we're talking about. Rodrigo Borgia, who became Pope Alexander VI, who famously had what he called the Banquet of chestnuts, wherein they threw a bunch of chestnuts on the ground and brought in 50 courtesans, and basically there was like hundreds of guests, and whoever was able to gather up the most chestnuts ended up getting a night with one of the courtesans. Keep in mind, this is happening in the Vatican Palace. But no, that's not the Pope we're talking about today. No. The Pope we're talking about is a guy by the name of Pope Porp.
Porp.
By the way, actually, should totally do a Brandon's Random Factoid on Cesar Borgia as well.
Oh, yeah. Fucking, you could do a whole fucking series on that guy. Look, you thought he was crazy fucking shit in Assassin's Creed. The reality barely compares. But no. We're talking about a guy by the name of Pope Formosus. Now, he was Pope from October 891 AD to his death in 896 AD. He wasn't Pope for very long, but what happened during the time he was Pope and then what ended up happening after he was Pope is fucking insane. Basically, what you need to know is he was a native of Rome. He was born around 816, and he became the Cardinal Bishop of Porto in 864. And then 2 years later, he became the Papal Legate to Bulgaria. He undertook missions to France for diplomatic reasons in 869 and 872. And then when Louis II passed away in 875, they elected his uncle, Charles the Bald, who would be Holy Roman Emperor. So, and I'm going to quote from Wikipedia here. Formosus conveyed Pope John VIII's invitation for King Charles to come to Rome to be crowned emperor. Charles took the crown at Pavia and received the imperial insignia in Rome on the 29th of December. Those who favored the Empress Engelbergia, widowed, or her brother-in-law, Louis the German, did not support the coronation. Fearing political retribution, many of them left Rome surreptitiously. Formosus himself fled to Tours after despoiling the cloisters in Rome. Then, on April 19th, John VIII called a synod, which ordered Pope Formosus and other papal officials to return to Rome. When Formosus did not comply, he was removed from the ranks of the clergy and excommunicated on the grounds that he had deserted his diocese without papal permission and had aspired to the position of Archbishop of Bulgaria. Additional charges included the accusations that he had opposed the emperor, quote, and conspired with certain iniquitous men and women for the destruction of the papal see and had despoiled the cloisters in Rome. Then he was then eventually... In 878, the sentence of excommunication was withdrawn after he promised never to return to Rome. Then in 867, while he was serving as legate to the court, Prince Bogoris requested that he be named the Archbishop of Bulgaria. Since the canons forbade a bishop to leave his own see to overtake the government of another, the request was denied. Let's see. Shortly after his election, he was asked to intervene in Constantinople, where Patriarch Photius I had been ejected and Stephen, the son of Emperor Basil I, had taken the office. Formosus refused to reinstate those who had been ordained by Photius, as his predecessor, Stephen V, had nullified all of Photius's ordinations. Formosus almost immediately immersed himself in the dispute between Odo, the Count Court of Paris, and Charles the Simple for the French crown. By the way, have you noticed all these fucking nicknames here?
Yeah.
fucking hell. Pope sided with Charles and zealously exhorted Odo, then holding the crown to abdicate on Charles' behalf to no avail. And then during his papacy, he also had to contend with the Saracens who were attacking Lazio. For those of you who don't know what the Saracens are, basically, Saracens was just a name that they used to refer to any Arabs or Muslims at the time. It was a fairly common medieval name that they used. Then he died in 896. He was succeeded by Pope Boniface VI. So, okay, so that's sort of where the story ends, right? Wrong. Get ready for this next part, because it is fucking insane. All right, so Pope Stephen VI, who was Pope Boniface VI's successor, was influenced by both Lambert and Eckertrude, who sat in judgment of Formosus in 897 in what is now called the Cadaver Synod. Now, do you remember what I told you when Formosus died? 896, right? And the synod is happening in 897.
Okay.
So you know what they did?
Huh.
They went to his tomb, they dug up Formosus' rotting corpse, still clad in pestilential vestments, and then seated him on a throne to face all the charges against him from John the VII.
That is hardcore.
The verdict was that the deceased had been unworthy of the pontificate. The damnatio memoriae, an old judicial practice from ancient Rome, was applied to Formosus. All his measures and acts were annulled, and the orders conferred by him were declared invalid. The papal vestments were torn from his body, the three fingers from his right hand he had used in blessings were cut off, and the corpse was thrown into the river Tiber.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
Eventually, years later, after John the VII died in 882, a monk would actually find the Pope's corpse and retrieve it from the River Tiber. He would then, one of the later popes, I think it is, let's see, the macabre spectacle turned public opinion in Rome against Pope Stephen. Rumors circulated that Formosus' body, after washing up on the banks of the River Tiber, had begun to perform miracles. A public uprising led to Stephen being deposed and imprisoned. While in prison, in July or August 897, he was strangled. In December 897, Pope Theodore II convened a synod that annulled the Cadaver Synod. God rehabilitated Formosus and ordered that his body, which had been recovered from the Tiber, be buried in St. Peter's Basilica in pontifical vestments. Furthermore, John the Ninth also nullified the Cadaver Synod, convening two synods, one in Rome, one in Ravenna, which confirmed the findings of Theodore the Second Synod, ordered the acta of the Cadaver Synod destroyed, excommunicated the seven cardinals who were involved in the Cadaver Synod, and prohibited any future trial of a dead person, which is the reason why there has not been such a thing to happen in the Catholic Church since.
Okay.
Weird flex, but okay.
However, finally, Pope Sergius III, sometime between 904 and 911, who as bishop had taken part in the Cadaver Synod as a co-judge, overturned the rulings of Theodore II and John the Ninth, reaffirmed Formosus' conviction, and had a laudatory epitaph inscribed on the tomb of Stephen the Sixth. You know, at some point, these guys are like, you gotta ask, like, guys, let it the fuck go.
Yeah.
Literally, all this shit happened because Formosus didn't want to return to where shit was going down because he didn't want to die.
Yeah.
This is Game of Thrones shit. And it was happening in the fucking Catholic Church. Whoa.
Well, I mean, that it had to get inspired by something.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, George R.R. Martin's ideas didn't come out ex nihilo. He had inspiration. Anyway, now then, that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. We got three assholes, well, technically two assholes of the week, but one of them did two awful things that kind of made them
the dubious champion.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, okay, what kind of assholes can do two things in one week that's awful? It's ICE, also known as America's Gestapo, because that is legit what they have turned into. So, first and foremost, in Michigan, ICE set up a fake college so that they could lure foreign students arrest them, and then deport them. That's some supervillain shit right yeah. there.
That's some Trump University shit right there. Yeah, so they have arrested about 250 students since January on immigration violation by U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement as part of a sting operation by federal agents who enticed foreign-born students, mostly from India, to attend the school that marketed itself as offering graduate programs in technology and computer studies. Mm-hmm. Many of those arrested have been deported to India, while others are contesting their removals. One has been allowed to stay after being granted lawful permanent resident status by an immigration judge. And yeah, like, here's the weird thing. They arrived legally in the U.S. on student visas. Mm-hmm. Since the University of Farmington is what the name was for this fake school, was later revealed to be a creation of federal agents, they lost their immigration status after it was shut down in January. So literally, they came in legally.
Mm-hmm.
They shut down the school because it was fake. It was a sting operation. And so they got them on technically not having visas. This is some fucking...
That is some evil shit.
Yeah, this is literally like people that were not in the country, they encouraged to come to the country to arrest them for illegal immigration. Like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, they're the reason these people came to the country.
Yep.
Is there, like, you know, cops putting a sign, like, free shoes and arresting people for, mm-hmm. like, whatever stupid sting they're trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the... out of the approximately 250 students arrested on administrative charges, nearly 80% were granted voluntary departure and departed the United States. It's like literally just wasting people's times and hopes.
Yeah.
And like doing that to
I'm starting to wonder, like, does the ICE have like a fucking quota system they have to go by now?
It wouldn't shock me.
Because I'm starting to think that's what's happening here.
Yeah, it's like this doesn't make any sense. It's like, you've got money to spend, so let's, like, in their budget, and they're like, okay, let's set up a fake school, get foreign students to come here, and then we'll arrest them. And they took their money, too, for the school.
Yep.
That's the thing. Yeah, like, that's right. They charged them like they're the a money. Real school and kept mm-hmm. the money. This is, which is another level of awful shit that, like, regular cops do. Like, I think cops make more money from the illegal search and seizures than they do from, like, fines and shit
mm-hmm.
that they put true. On people. It's like, when you're making all your money from things that are not, like, tickets and all that sort of shit, then that's some really fucked up shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the first thing they've done.
Now, I'm just wondering if there's not, like, fraud charges that they could be brought on at this point.
They could, but you forget who's currently Attorney General right now.
Mm. He's not going to be there forever. Yeah.
When they're working on behalf of the federal government, it's not... I assume they have legal status for doing whatever the fuck they want.
Mm. So, yeah. But that wasn't the only shitty thing that ICE did this week. Oh, no! Some of y'all might remember recently there was a hotel that collapsed in New Orleans. Yeah. And among the injured was a construction worker who was originally from Honduras. He came here, and he worked here in the U.S. And then ICE decided to deport him back to Honduras. By the way, have you been watching what's going down in Honduras right now?
Yeah. And the fucked up thing is they did this in the middle of the investigation, which yep. they're not supposed to be doing. Because he is a witness for this.
Yep.
The other thing is he is essentially a whistleblower. Because he noticed that, like, there was some... Like, what the work they were doing was not up to what it should be done... What it should be to make this a safe place to work. Mm-hmm. And obviously evidenced by the fact that it collapsed as they were working on it. Mm-hmm. He was right. And so... That made him, you know, a noteworthy person. ICE obviously looks into his legal status and is like, oh, he's not here illegally. well, let's deport him, you know, after nearly killing him in this, because let's see, there's three workers got killed and dozens more were injured in this whole thing. So, yeah, lots of fucked up shit here. This ain't even everything, because we just had, like, what, a teenager died in custody the other day to a flu, because they, the people at that facility just refused to get a medical aid.
Yeah.
Because that's where they're at now. Just wanting people to suffer and die.
Yeah. Of
easily preventable.
Look, we call them concentration camps for a reason, people.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what they are. But, of course, we got one more asshole of the week than ICE. The absolute scum of the earth. Bubbling up from underneath the sewers and back onto the streets again. It's George fucking Zimmerman. Who has decided that because he hasn't made Trayvon Martin's family suffer enough, has decided that he's going to sue their family for more than $1 million. $100 million, excuse me.
Yep. Yeah, he is suing Martin's family, prosecutors, and others involved in the case. He claims rested on false evidence, according to a copy of the suit sent to the media Wednesday. That was the case of his shooting of an unarmed kid, Trayvon Martin. He's represented by Larry Klayman, a high-profile legal crusader tied to conservative causes and the founder of Judicial Watch.
He's also with the notoriously group. Fucking sucks at doing even that, because pretty much all the high-profile cases he's done in the last 10 years of all, he's fucking failed all of them.
Yeah. And I guess the suit that he has filed in the Polk County Circuit Court cites information in a documentary about the case titled The Trayvon Hoax that accuses the Martin family of engineering false testimony. The director has scheduled a press conference this week in Coral Gables to coincide with the film screening there, to which the people running Coral Gables had no idea what the specifics of this event and promptly shut it down as a result, because they're like, we're not doing this shit. Yeah, Coral Gables Art Cinema was not aware of all the details surrounding this event. And yeah, the theater posted on Twitter. The movie's director, Joe Gilbert, said Thursday he had to cancel the planned event that day and was hoping to hold it somewhere else on Friday. Which, you know, is always a good idea when you're deciding the day before the event, like, we need to host this somewhere. Yeah, so... everybody involved in this is just pure filth.
Yeah.
That needs to just be left out of court.
Absolute dregs of humanity.
Yeah. And it's not even subtle after, anymore.
Yeah, this is after he sold the gun that was used
that
to kill
That he used to kill Trayvon Martin.
Yeah.
Which, he got it. He sold it for like, what was it, like 100 and something grand?
It was obscene.
That was the like a second or third attempt to do it. Because nobody bought it the first couple times.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, like, if he were actually brought up on charges and convicted on that, he would not be allowed to sell that gun. That would be either kept in evidence locker at the whatever police station it would be at, or he just would not be allowed to sell it.
Yeah.
But since he got acquitted, he could do whatever he wants with it and advertise it that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I guess, one little bright spot of this is Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mom. She's running for the District 1 seat on the Miami-Dade County Commissioner Commission, being vacated by a term-limited Barbara Jordan in the Miami Gardens area. So that'll be, I assume, sometime next year. So yeah, if you want to actually support somebody who has done a lot of work since her son's death, trying to fight for gun control and all that, those in Miami-Dade County area should definitely keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So those were our assholes of the week, but we do have a hero of the week. And our hero of the week is well, we got two, actually. The first is none other than Jon Bon Jovi. Jon Bon Jovi recently started a restaurant called Soul Kitchen, called the JBJ Soul Kitchen. And it feeds the homeless for free.
Yep. It is in, let's see, New Jersey.
Somewhere in New Jersey. Yeah, obviously.
Red Bank.
Yeah.
Red Bank is just another stop on the New Jersey Transit rail line. Just a few feet from the lumbering train cars is a place that almost feels like home. The JBJ Soul Kitchen, cooking up classic farm-to-table cuisine 5 days a week. So he's co-founded it 8 years ago. Turned what used to be an auto body repair shop into a restaurant where no one has ever turned away. Mm-hmm. Here's how it works. There are no prices on the menu. Diners are asked to pay a $20 donation that covers their meal and someone else's meal too. And if you can't donate money, you can donate your service like washing dishes and helping out around there in exchange for your supper.
Mm-hmm.
So like the homeless who have nothing to spend on that can just kind of, you know, clean up, help out a little bit. Make some use of their time to help out others and themselves. It's actually the brainchild of Bon Jovi's wife, Dorothy Hurley. Hmm. She ran across Crouch one day and said, "I have this idea. It was genius," he said. Nearly all the labor is volunteer. Much of the food is donated. On any given night, nearly every seat is filled, roughly half by donors, half of those who may not know where their next meal is coming from.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like that's it's an incredibly nice thing to do, especially for somebody who has, you know, the money to make sure, you know, this thing is well taken care of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not to worry about trying to make money off of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. He also talks a bit about. Hunger doesn't look like what your mind's eye might imagine. It's the people at your church, the kids that go to your school with your kids. I think that was eye-opening for a lot of the community here that said, oh, there's no homeless people here. And they look around the restaurant and say, I can name five people right now that I know are homeless in this restaurant right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't look like what you think they're going to look like. It's not the stereotype that you're expecting to see. And yeah.
That's no, it's good. True, man. You know, my parents, you know, they'll volunteer for, you know, our local church's homeless program a couple times a year. And, there are totally people that come in. It's like you do not expect – it's like, no, they are totally homeless, but they do not at all fit what you imagine a homeless person looks like.
Yeah, not like the Simpsons stereotype and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we had those guys too, but
yeah,
they were actually in the minority. Most of the ones that showed up are usually fairly clean dressed, and you know, like whole families come in and shit. It's very eye opening experience. But one other thing, Pop Aria, you guys may remember her for. That song, Swing from the Chandelier, that song. Yeah,
she always has the crazy wigs and such on.
Yeah, she does everything she possibly can to make sure nobody sees her face, even though, you know, there are plenty of pictures of her face out there because, you know, she actually started her pop career back in the late 90s. But anyway, she's paying for shoppers' grocery bills for Thanksgiving.
Yep. Yeah, she went to local stores like Walmart and some of the others mm-hmm. nearby. And kind of as people were going to check out, like saying, hey, no, put this on my card kind of mm-hmm. thing and help them pay for people's groceries for the holidays and whatnot. And people just started posting about it on Twitter and showing their videos, you know, as they realized who this was and what they were doing, kind of just sharing the story of you know, great mm-hmm. things she was doing. And apparently she does, usually like once a year, goes and like helps pay for people's things.
Mm, two good examples mm-hmm. of paying it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that was our Heroes of the Week. And now we're going to start off with the show proper. The proper show proper, rather. Next up, start us off, first story of the night. In Indiana, the governor has rescinded fines and citations for workers' deaths because he wants to get Amazon's second headquarters in his state.
Classy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like part of the shitty things governors and mayors did to try to sway Amazon to put in their state.
Mm-hmm.
Like huge tax breaks, things that no other business would get.
I don't know why Amazon needs tax breaks. They don't pay any taxes.
Yeah.
Because Jeff Mozo needs another space colony.
Yeah. And, yeah, so this involved a worker that was killed by a forklift in Plainfield Warehouse in 2017. State of Indiana's investigator found the company was at fault. The state cited Amazon for four major safety violations and fined it $28,000. An investigation by Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting has found that as Governor Eric Holcomb sought to lure Amazon's HQ to Indiana, state labor officials quietly resolved Amazon of responsibility. After Amazon appealed, they deleted every fine that had been levied and accepted the company's arguments that the Amazon worker was to blame. The investigator in the case, John Sloan, had arrived at the warehouse a day after 59-year-old Philip Lee Terry was crushed to death. He was so troubled by the pushback he was getting from higher-ups that he secretly recorded his boss, Indiana OSHA Director Julia Alexander, as she counseled the company on how to lessen the fine. It's like being at a card table and having a dealer teach you how to count cards, he said. I was like, yeah, this is some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
So they're trying to help Amazon cover up a death that they're responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
The chance of luring Amazon to, for some reason, put their second headquarters in Indiana. That seems far-fetched to happen, but also it seems like since they put out this whole report, Reveal and the Indianapolis Star here, the details became a matter of public dispute on November 29th when Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's general counsel issued cease and desist letters to Reveal and the Indianapolis Star. It seems to essentially confirm all of it. Because they would not send that out if it wasn't real. Stallone maintains that he resigned his job after being told that he was going to be terminated for job performance issues, personnel records, released by Indiana, listed his departure as a termination for failing to, quote, successfully complete probationary period.
Mm.
And yeah, I guess legal counsel for the Reveal and Indy Star have sent separate responses to the governor's cease and desist letters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Fuck those people. Yep. Seriously. God damn. And I want to remind people, as I always must remind people, nobody on Earth earns $1 billion. Okay?
Nope. Especially hundreds of billions. Like Bezos.
Become the actual trillionaire like Jeff Bezos. You don't earn that much money. You steal it.
Yeah.
You By steal it from your people. Workers' wages. You steal it from their pension. You steal it from local taxpayers. You steal it from states who you basically make kowtow to you and give you money.
From undercutting competition to lower their value until you can buy them for pennies on the dollar.
Hmm.
Yep. So, yeah. Next up, and things that are funny, some of y'all may know there was a UN summit that happened this week. And somebody was there with, I guess, a smartphone or a camera or something. And while they were there, they managed to get some footage of world leaders, including current Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, basically making fun of Donald Trump.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just amazingly hilarious just to hear how candid they were about it. Like,
yeah, it's like, he's like, "Did you have to deal with that fucker?" "Yeah, I had to deal with that fucker last week." He's such a fucker, isn't he? Yeah. It was Justin Trudeau, I think Boris Johnson,
Which tells you just how far we've fallen on the world stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
And it wasn't one of them Macron?
Macron, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, personally, like Boris Johnson is not one who should be laughing because he's in the same situation.
He is basically Britain's Trump, but even he is like even he is like can't compare.
He has like, actual people skills.
Granted, he uses those people skills for evil, but
yeah.
So so Donald Trump did exactly what you expected. He took his toys and went home.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean he literally canceled all the appointments he was going to have at the UN for the day and just went home and moped.
Yeah. That's, exactly the kind of behavior that you want from your world leaders, your president.
Mm-hmm.
Not be able to take any kind of criticism.
Yeah. He was asked about the video, and he basically called Justin Trudeau two-faced. And I'm like, high kettle, you're the pot, I'm calling you black, you know. Speaking of Trump, by the way, yes, the impeachment story is still ongoing. They basically wrapped up the Judiciary Committee hearings today. I mean, this week.
I think we got one more on Monday.
We got I think that's the last one, and then I think the House is going to be voting on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it goes to Senate. Now, exactly how the House vote is going to go, a lot of people are suggesting it's basically going to be strictly along party lines. I don't think that's quite going to how it's going to be. I'm pretty sure there's going to be probably one or two Republicans like Justin Amash who are basically going to say, yeah, we're you vote for impeachment. There might be one outlier Democrat who won't, but it's going to be pretty predictable, I think. Amongst other things, the White House basically has refused to participate in the House Judiciary Committee's hearing.
Yep.
So
that's helping.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think they had a deadline of 5 p.m. today to confirm that they were going to – what they were going to do. And it was you need to end this now and these hearings and all this now. It's no, that's not how it works.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're the one being investigated. You don't get to tell us what we're investigating.
No. Also, I believe it was Speaker Pelosi actually ordered that articles of impeachment actually be produced.
Yeah.
So there, that's what's going to be voted on. Probably this week. The White House is refusing to participate. We also got the summary of the committee's first hearing this week.
Yeah. This one mostly featured a bunch of law professors who are specialized in constitutional law.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of Republicans desperately trying to divert attention away to something else.
Yeah, within the first 5 minutes of the hearing, Republicans were committed to trying to gum up the works using a variety of parliamentary stall tactics. The first 90 minutes of the hearings, Republicans forced roll call votes of the 41 members of the committee three times. Once to try to force Rep. Adam Schiff, a California Democrat, to testify. Once to postpone the hearings. And a third time to force the so-called whistleblower to testify. While those motions were voted down, as well as such future motions offered by Republicans on Wednesday, they had the desired slowdown effect nonetheless. They were just really very much annoying from the clips I saw. Just essentially children just being, oh, we don't want to do this. just being very whiny. Jared Nadler had to be you sit down and shut up. We're here to do some work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch the rest of this is going to happen very quickly at this point.
Yeah.
If the rumors are that they want to get this done by Christmas, stuff is going to move very fast going forward.
Yeah. Now, like I said, after the House votes it, it's then going to move to the Senate. The Senates are going to be the one who votes on whether or not to convict him. And if they do, then he is, in fact, removed from office. Because basically the Senate, basically what happens is the House are the people who, like, produce the state's case against him. The Senate acts as the actual court. And here's the thing. The White House is going to have to actually testify when that happens.
Yeah.
And there have been rumors floating around that Trump might actually want to represent himself.
Oh, by all means.
Yes, please do that. That is a very good idea.
He does like ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'll be the biggest ratings ever, believe me.
Yeah, it'll be huge.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw one of the biggest quote-unquote controversies that came out of this hearing, which involved, Professor Carlin, who was asked by one of the Democratic committee members to elucidate the difference between a king and a president as a way to more broadly explain why the Founding Fathers included the impeachment clause in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. She responded this way, the Constitution says there can be no titles of nobility, so while the president can name his son Baron, he can't make him a baron. And, of course, people like a lot of pro-clutchers are out there, especially like Melania Trump, who took offense to the reference to her teenage son. A minor child deserves privacy and should be kept out of politics. Pamela Carlin, you should be ashamed of your very angry and obviously biased public pandering using a child to do it. Which, again, she was not saying anything about the kid.
No.
She was saying he cannot make his son Baron a Baron himself. He can just name
Trump's kid is named Baron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The youngest.
Yeah. Which is.
But yeah.
Definitely, it's one of those things like you can tell the people that want to be angry about something because everybody else is like, no, there's no attack on the kid, especially nothing like what we've seen with like Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the Obama girls.
Mm-hmm.
Who still get a lot of shit for just being, college age girls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my God, they're drinking. Nobody in college ever drank before.
Yeah.
That's what especially college is
not,
for.
Yeah. Nobody ever drank in college, especially a certain member of the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Apparently he
Do
likes
you like beer.
Beer?
Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, that's basically it for the committee hearings, at least for the one that's going to be on Monday. After that, the House will be voting, and then we're going to see where it all goes from there. The House will probably vote to impeach. Whether or not the Senate will convict, really up in the air. I really don't have my hopes up for it. They may surprise me.
It's going to really boil down to how many GOP members Trump has pissed off enough to vote against him.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's that many.
Yeah. Keep in mind that, like one of the, we've only had one other president get impeached before. This most recently, that was William Clinton. That was Bill Clinton, of course. Nixon was very close to getting impeached. He ended up resigning.
Yeah.
And for those who don't remember him, he actually resigned when he found out that basically what happened is that Senator Barry Goldwater went up to the Oval Office and basically told him, look, dude, you're not going to have the votes to survive this. So he just straight up decided to resign. So it's possible what may happen, and this is completely out of fucking left field, but it's still possible, is that someone, probably either Lindsey Graham or the Turtle Man himself, will probably go to his office and tell him, look, dude, you're really not going to be able to survive this shit. This is going to drag to the dirt. What we could do is you could resign. We can, you know, maybe like, you know, we can make an arrangement so that, you know, we'll, you know, maybe your successor will pardon you. Because those who don't know, if Trump is impeached, then that means we get President Mike Pence.
Yeah. For another, well, 9 months or so.
About 10 or 11 months, yeah. But anyway, we'll see where it goes. Anyway. All right, and next up in the news from the 2020 Democratic presidential race, Kamala Harris officially ended her campaign this week.
Yeah, because she ran out of money, apparently.
Yep.
Which, doesn't that just kind of disturb anybody else?
That she was basically spending money left, right, and center?
No, that basically the only people that can actually get anywhere are the people who have huge amounts of money.
Yeah, that definitely worry you.
Mm. It definitely says a lot, like, as she's leaving, Michael Bloomberg steps into the picture with his...
All of the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just essentially, like, buying his slot into the campaigning for the next, you know, year at this point.
Mm-hmm. It sucks. I really don't like it. It's why we generally need a legit left-wing party in the United States.
Mm.
We need a real labor party. Some kind of actual social democratic party or a socialist party or hell, even a fucking communist party. Just something. Because I'm sick of this shit.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But yeah, so how many does that leave now?
Like a dozen or so still.
Yeah, but like there's only like five or contenders in there, to be honest.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren is still in there.
Yeah, Liz Warren is still there. Joe Biden is still there. Pete Buttigieg is still there.
We didn't mention it Bernie's above, but Joe Biden actually used that Trudeau video in his ad like a day ago. So,
Did you see him threaten to challenge like a heckler to a push-up contest?
Yeah,
it's like that's a very old man thing to do.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Old man yelling at clouds.
Like you're really just you're not helping your case here, Joe.
No, that's fine.
Especially when you're getting angry at people at a town hall meeting.
Yeah,
it's like. First off, you went to it, so that you're that old to begin with. And just, like, threatening to get into not a fisticuffs fight, but just a physical endurance fight, because you're sizing up a guy and seeing, like, oh, he probably can't do as many push-ups as I can. That's very, like, just shit-talking kind of fight you're going into, which in a normal society, that would be like a headline story.
Yeah.
But there's like, we got a half dozen things ahead of that here.
Now, if Joe Biden had challenged somebody to a breakdancing contest, that would have been much better news.
He doesn't even know what
breakdancing
is.
And probably much better to watch, too.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Next up in stories that are going to make you just fucking hand to face, Nikki Haley. Some of you may remember Nikki Haley was... until fairly recently, I think she was governor of, South Carolina? Some of you also may remember another thing that happened during her time in South Carolina as governor, which was Dylann Roof, who basically got a fucking machine gun, dressed himself up with a bunch of Confederate and Rhodesian flags, and went into a church whose, its members are predominantly African-American, and straight up murdered a bunch of them.
Yep.
And amongst other things, that reopened the old debate about the meaning of the Confederate flag, and I think also probably settled it, like for good.
Yeah, like they after had to pull the flag down, that was outside of the state house.
Yeah. Like at this point, it's after that. I think it's now genuinely accepted by most reasonable people what the flag actually represents.
Yeah.
Apparently no one gave that message to fucking Nikki Haley, because this week she claimed that Dylann Roof hijacked the meaning of the Confederate flag.
Yeah, and you'll be excited who she was talking to. It was Glenn Beck.
Who is still around, believe it or not.
Yeah, he's got a new place he's hanging out at. But yeah, they talked about her decision in 2015 to remove the Confederate battle flag from the South Carolina State House after the shooting at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Haley, who also served as ambassador to the United Nations during the Trump administration, was asked about the flag by Beck, who noted that South Carolinians support her movement to take the flag off of the flagpoles and lower that and get it out. How do you do that? He asked the former governor. This was one of the oldest African-American churches. These 12 people are amazing people. They love their church. They love their family. They love their community. Haley replied, referring to 9 people whom Dylann killed in 2015. And here is this guy that comes out with this manifesto holding the Confederate flag and had just hijacked everything that people thought of about the flag. And she says, but you know, people saw it as service and sacrifice and heritage. But once he did that,
and they're
no
wrong.
Comment. Those are the lies that people in the South have been taught about the flag and the Confederacy.
I can confirm. This woman has no morals or ethics. No.
Wasn't she the one that she would be at the UN hearings about important things involving, like, Russia or the Ukraine or whatever, and she just walked out?
Yep.
She just left and was like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that people with morals, you know, do all the time is just leave during important things that are going on.
Mm. Yeah, but if you want to know what the Confederate flag stands for, I'll tell you what it stands for. It stands for slavery. It stands for treason. It stands for white supremacy. And it stands for a bunch of rich planters who didn't want to let go of their free labor, so they conned about half the country into going against, into betraying their country.
And now it stands for hundreds of, maybe thousands of statues that mm-hmm. have been set up in the last 100 years to show black people that they're not as free as they think they are. As they're supposed to be. Because mm-hmm. they're still keeping an eye on them.
Mm-hmm.
Letting them know what they think of them.
Yeah.
That's everywhere in this country, not just the South. Because after that whole thing went down, people, you know, have moved around the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it spreads around.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up. From Brazil. President Jair Bolsonaro blames Leonardo DiCaprio for funding NGOs to burn down the Amazon. And that was a sentence I just said.
Yep. Okay, there's got to be some logic there somewhere.
Using the term logic loosely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Some kind of thread or something that could connect all of these things together.
It probably looks like a complicated football play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so let's see. DiCaprio's environmental organization, Earth Alliance, has pledged $5 million to help protect the Amazon after a surge in fires destroyed large parts of the rainforest in July and August. But the actor and committed environmentalist said in a statement sent to the Associated Press Friday, his group had not funded any of the 2 nonprofits named by investigators so far. It's like what Bolsonaro was sort of ranting about, that supposedly like he helped fund these groups that went in and set some of the fires in the Amazon. that particularly spread. He also said in the statement, while worthy of support, we do not fund the organizations targeted. The future of these irreplaceable ecosystems at stake, and I'm proud to stand with the groups protecting them. So I think it's going off the reputation of DiCaprio, like in his group, sort of working to help protect the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Bolsonaro doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
No.
And sort of wanting to drag him and blame him for these things without any proof.
Yeah.
At all. And just.
And also, for those who don't know, Bolsonaro's government is going hard against any of the indigenous tribes in the Amazon who are actually trying to protect their homes.
Yeah.
Because he really is just that big of a piece of shit.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. In more environmental news, the UN recently put out their climate report and basically told us that drastic action is really the only way to avoid the worst effects of climate change.
Yep. They say, amid that growing pressure to act, Tuesday's UN report offers a grim assessment of how off track the world remains. Global temperatures are on pace to rise as much as 3.2 degrees Celsius, 5.8 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century, according to the UN's annual emissions gap report, which assesses the difference between the world's current path and the changes needed to meet the goals of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. As part of that deal, world leaders agreed to hold warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius compared with pre-industrial levels. The current trajectory is nearly twice that. Should that pace continue, scientists say the results could be widespread, catastrophic effects such as coral reefs already dying in some places would probably dissolve in increasingly acidic oceans. Some coastal cities already wrestling with flooding would be constantly inundated by rising seas. And much of the world's severe heat, already intense, could become unbearable. Global greenhouse gas emissions must begin falling by 7.6% each year beginning 2020. Right, currently nowhere in sight to meet the most ambitious aims of the Paris Climate Accord. And yeah, its authors acknowledge that the findings are bleak. After all, the world has never demonstrated the ability to cut greenhouse gas emissions on such a scale.
Hmm.
And it seems like nobody has any real interest in making those big changes.
I mean, the Chinese have basically said that they're trying to go completely green by this time next year. They're going to do that, good luck. Good luck.
I'm not going to discourage it.
Yeah.
They've got the manpower to at least work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've already made some pretty amazing strides as far as environmental sustainability goes, but...
Yeah. I mean, if they were really smart, they would be offering their services to every country out there.
Yeah.
Might as well paint themselves as much as they're being painted as not the greatest people around as far as dealing with their own citizens and such. Might as well try.
Like, hey, you do this, it'll give you some eternal history cred right here.
Yeah.
We will tell to the... If tomorrow the chairman Xi Jinping and the Communist Party of China came out and said, we're hereby announcing that we are willing to sell our services for very small price, even for free if we can, to help you lower your greenhouse emissions now, we'll do it. We're going to do that for you now. We are willing to do this.
Mm. We'll conveniently install these cameras everywhere so we can spy on you.
But, yeah, so next up, over in Russia, somebody found an 18,000-year-old prehistoric pupper in the permafrost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A cute zombified puppy.
Yeah, prehistoric puppy believed to be about 18,000 years old, found in the permafrost in the country's far east. Discovered last year in a lump of frozen mud near the city of Yakutsk. The puppy is unusually well preserved with its hair, teeth, whiskers, and eyelashes still intact.
It is.
All its limbs, pelage, fur, even whiskers. The nose is visible. There are teeth. We can determine due to some data that it is a male. yeah, in recent years. So like, it's also part of global warming is that the permafrost, a lot of it is starting to melt, and we don't really know a lot about what's in there.
Yeah.
Especially with some of it potentially being like ancient diseases and such that haven't been around for thousands of years.
Yeah.
If not longer. And we don't know exactly like how that's going to work out.
Although I do want to point out, people talk about that, but it's not quite the doomsday scenario you're probably thinking it is. Because most of the diseases that exist now basically are diseases that more or less evolved from diseases from thousands of years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah. So although it'll probably be diseases that haven't been seen in thousands of years, they'll probably largely resemble the ones that we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also a lot
of potential. It won't be terribly difficult to figure out how to how to treat them.
Hmm.
There's also potential.
If we haven't evolved past them outright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, that's the other thing. Humans have actually collectively evolved a degree of immunity that has made it so that most of the old ancient diseases don't hurt us anymore.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
There's also a possibility of like a weird kind of enhancement of our current global warming because of a lot of carbon dioxide and such also coming out of these this permafrost.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of trapped there for a long time as well.
Yeah.
So potential of like, oh, just like a cyclical effect of just feeding into it and enhancing the effects that we're getting.
Yeah.
It's kind of having this like feedback loop going on.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Unfortunately, there is actually a fix to that, which is simply plant some trees. I mean, not some, but a bunch.
Billions of trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, reforestation is something people are already actively taking part in. So.
Yeah. Just need to tell.
I know if it sounds. Like, I just want to point out, if it sounds like I'm kind of like grasping for straws or something here, I'm not. It's just whenever stories about climate change come up, it's really easy for people to get bogged down in the very bleak, dreary scenarios that they can bring. But yeah. Keep in mind, all of these things only happen if we do nothing.
Yeah, we're not totally fucked yet.
No.
We need people in power to stop fucking around.
Yeah. And fortunately, the majority of the world seems to have come around to the idea. And the ones who haven't are, well, dying very quickly. Because, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wouldn't, yeah, just don't lose hope.
Yep.
Okay? Anyway. Next up. NASA and a Chennai engineer actually managed to find India's lost Vikram moon lander.
Yeah, so they managed to locate it and sort of post this this neat little image showing green dots that are the debris of the lander and sort of blue dots with soil disturbance of other parts as they go around and all that sort of stuff, and sort of managed to finally figure out like what the heck happened to this thing. And it seems like the Chandrayaan 2 Vikram lander was targeted for a highland smooth plain about 600 kilometers from the South Pole. Fortunately, the ISR organization lost contact with their lander shortly before the scheduled touchdown. Despite the loss, getting that close to service was an amazing achievement. Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter camera team released the first mosaic of the site on September 26th. Many people have downloaded the mosaic to search for signs of the Vikram. Shanmuga Subramanian contacted the LRO project with a positive identification of debris. Receiving this tip, the LROC team confirmed the identification by comparing before and after images. When the images for the first mosaic were acquired, the impact point was poorly eliminated, thus not easily identifiable. And so they just did a lot of work sort of going over these different images and sort of figuring out the subtle changes that pinpointed likely where this thing landed, sort of how it how this all happened.
Yeah, it looks like it's scattered quite a ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It like kind of just crashed into the ground and sent a bunch of shit into the air.
Yep.
Because they just lost connection to it shortly before it was supposed to start slowing down and landing. Mm. So when it doesn't do the proper slowing down, just boom, right into it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like what happens when I play Kerbal Space Program.
Yeah.
And lose all my fuel to be able to do anything about what's going on.
Mm. Well, got closer than anybody else has. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Next up. And now the entertainment portion of the show. First, Netflix has signed a lease that's going to keep the historic Paris Theater in New York City open.
Yep. This is a theater that just has one screen.
Mm-hmm.
And had shut down earlier this year. They kind of brought it back for a bit to show, what was it, Romance Story, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is just on Netflix as of today or yesterday, somewhere the last couple days. Now they've signed a lease with the people that own it to kind of keep it open for a while. They're going to keep running the Marriage Story on there. Been running for 71 years. Probably one of the longest running theaters we have in this country.
Yeah.
Going back to around the time of World War One or World War Two, and some of the earliest parts of this of cinema history. Not all the way, because that was all in like the 1910s.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
St. George Theater is older, but not by much.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And like a lot of that technology obviously evolved as they got more widespread. Mm. I think like a lot of the earlier stuff was either stuff that you would actually like look into a box and like play like this moving images kind of thing. Like as almost like some of those little things you put on your face to like look at stuff. Yeah. Not too far from that. I remember reading about like some of the first movies, like one called, I think it was just like a train robbery movie.
Mm.
Like literally people had never seen anything like this. So they thought when the train was like coming at the screen, like they were going to get run over.
Like, yeah. And then there's the like last scene of the movie is, the cowboy, you know, with his revolver out taking shots at the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like ducking. Yeah, this is not made up. This shit actually happened.
Yeah, it was people a new medium. They didn't know what they were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool that Netflix is keeping it open, because I mean, they can show stuff like The Irishman there now if they want.
Yeah, which is a very good movie.
Oh,
by
fuck,
the way,
is it ever good?
Absolutely. Like, if you're at all interested in just, I mean, it's like all of, you know, Scorsese's best movies into one movie.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff. It's about fucking the mob. It's about Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters. It's about Fidel Castro. It's fucking amazing.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it's 3.5 hours, so it's like they combined all those movies into one film.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. That supposedly there is a way out there where you can sort of, using the pause function, you could kind of make it so that the movie happens kind of episodically.
Hmm.
There's like stuff out there that'll tell you how, but yeah.
Or they could have just done it themselves. Offers you like an episodic version.
Hmm.
Yeah. Kind of and, you know, also Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa, and you will never not see Jimmy Hoffa as Al Pacino ever again.
Yeah.
After watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard the CG stuff for making the actors look younger.
Yeah.
Kind of almost doesn't work because they still move like their old men forms do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, that seems like the thing that's like, you should have had somebody young. like do the motion capture at least for that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look as bad as a lot of people are saying it it is. It's...
Yeah, you kind of have to like kind of actually look for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. And finally, we got some trailers. First, we got the trailer for the new Bond movie, No Time to Die.
Yep. Which seems like a Bond movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a Bond movie.
Now, again, I was talking about the controversy earlier. The story here is basically James Bond just sort of decides to, I guess, retire.
Yeah.
From MI6 and sort of goes, and so it's this other person who ends up inheriting the title 007. That is the black woman that, you know, all the assholes on the internet have been screaming about as the new James Bond. She's not the new James Bond. She's just the new person to take the 007 title. And it's not even clear or not if that's going to happen, that if that's going to stay that way in the next Bond movie.
Hmm.
Or hell, if it's even going to stay that way through the whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the weird thing about the last few movies is, like, the... As far... I'm not really much of a Bond fan before Casino Royale, but it seems like a lot of people think Casino Royale is, like, the peak of the entire franchise.
Yeah, well, most kind of, because they've kind of been backsliding since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was such, like, a very bold kind of modern take on Bond. Whereas, like,
Go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say, the thing about Casino Royale is, first of all, it was the first original Bond novel. And it also hairs more closely to the original literary James Bond. Because unlike the film version of James Bond, the literary James Bond is a very troubled and brooding individual. He does have sex with a lot of women, but it's kind of like for the same reason that John F. Kennedy kept having sex with a lot of women. It was just to sort of fill a hole inside of him. Plus, let's be honest, the James Bond franchise, to remain relevant, has to update itself because... let's be honest, some of those older Bond movies don't really hold up all that well.
No.
Yeah, and even the Pierce Brosnan ones were not... were basically like just modern versions of those old movies.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of campy stuff, and it's like, all that shit you're doing here seems a lot more modern. You're just kind of playing around with some of these other aspects of it. It's like, mm-hmm. It didn't really... mesh well whenever I try to watch like Goldeneye or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, like Pierce Brosnan can't act, so that doesn't help either.
Or sing, for that matter, as we all found out from Mamma Mia, which I had to watch under duress. Thanks, Mom. Anyway, all right. Also, we got a teaser trailer for the Black Widow movie.
And this actually looks good.
Yes, yes, it does. I'm actually surprised it took them this long to give her own movie, because she was one of the attractions of the first Avengers film. So,
I think it got sidetracked a bit, especially when they were kind of evolving her story, and then got to the point of with Infinity War and Endgame, where they're very much looking to like end her story.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they didn't necessarily want to throw this in there and like confuse people, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because now they know there's like a definitive end, so this is like, here's kind of how things went early on in her life.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And yeah, having David Harbour in there is kind of really fun, just having watched the Stranger Things movies, the series. And, like, how he increasingly looks like he just does not give a fuck about shaving. Because he just has this big, bushy beard, and it's like he just went into, like, you want me here? You're getting me. I ain't shaving for no fucking Marvel movie.
Yeah. Yeah, May 2020, so right before the summer.
Yeah, May 1st.
Yep. Mayday. Hmm. All right. And finally, we got the second trailer for Disney's live-action version of Mulan.
Yeah.
Yep.
This one I have a little bit more hope for, seeing it. It seems like they're taking a little slightly different tact than they did with their other live action stuff. It's got a potential to actually be, you know, pretty interesting instead of just a frame for frame remake of whatever, what they did before.
Yeah.
And they kind of have to, cause there's, you can't really have a CG dragon dude hanging around and make it look any way, like it fits.
Yeah. And I think they've actually got some actual like Chinese studios involved in making this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, the movie isn't completely without controversy because the the actress who plays Mulan is of course herself Chinese born, and she has shown support for the Chinese government over the protesters in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You know, much the same way that Jackie Chan has.
Yeah.
So, you know, that might be a thing that happens when this movie comes out.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right. And that is, I believe, the end of the show.
Yeah.
And I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Yep.
All right. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you want to send a question, comment, or just want something you want us to read on the air, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We have it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can possibly think of. And with that, I have been your host, the most Bram Perkins, for Felipe Donalfo, Patrick Midland, and Chris Logie, saying goodnight.